This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today, Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
And our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. When Kristen said, okay, you know, when we're going to do the remodel, because we're celebrating 35 years, we also wanted to make it more open and inviting. So we made the lobby a lot more open for booth seats, a little bit different colors to kind of still keep it a little up to date, make it fresh. We wanted to make it cozier, make it a little bit brighter for people to see, to pay homage to where we have been the entire time. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
A search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere.
We welcome now everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. We will review a case that illustrates how the homeless community of Murfreesboro, Tennessee came together and played a vital role in assisting the police in solving a murder of one of their own and helped to bring a killer to justice. Our case study today involves the murder of Ahmad al-Azraqi. With us today to discuss this case is Murfreesboro Detective Doug Arrington.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
Our case study today boldly underlines the fact that under our law, every human life is valuable. Our justice system protects all of the people, be they rich or poor, without regard as to whether they live in a gated community or are homeless living on a creek bank. Our case study today is about the murder of Ahmad al-Azraqi, a homeless man born in a faraway country, a man who had his problems in life, but nonetheless, a man who did not deserve to be murdered and his body thrown away like trash dumped in a creek. Although Ahmad al-Azraqi was not rich in material things, he was rich in friends. Friends from the homeless community where he lived, friends who cared about him, friends who came forward and worked with the Murfreesboro Police Department to solve his murder. This is a case we can all learn from. We should learn, if we do not already know, how valuable each life is in our community and how valuable everyone is when we work together on a common goal, motivated not by what benefits us individually, but motivated to do what benefits our entire community. Motivated to simply do what is right. We begin our story on May the 12th, 2014. Trey Parsley, a construction worker, is working near the bridge that spans Lytle Creek, just off of Broad Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Parsley has been smelling a foul odor for several days, and he decides to investigate. Trey Parsley makes a grisly discovery. In the creek below, in less than a foot of water, Parsley sees the body of a man. Parsley immediately calls the police. When the police arrive, they discover the man found in Lytle Creek has been dead for several days. They search for identification, but find none. But the man does have several tattoos. The police use those tattoos, and along with other indicators, they are finally able to identify the body. The body is that of a 47-year-old homeless man, Ahmad al-Ezraki. At the autopsy, it is determined that Ahmad al-Ezraki died as a result of having his throat cut. Through excellent investigative work, the police begin to locate witnesses. Most of the witnesses come from the homeless community. The witnesses tell the police that the last time they saw Ahmad al-Ezraki was Sunday, the fourth day of May, 2014. And at that time, Mr. Ezraki was in the company of Charles Warner. Other witnesses tell the police that within a couple of hours of seeing the two men together, they see Charles Warner again, alone, at an apartment on Main Street that is shared by the homeless. The witnesses describe how Warner had blood on his face, his hands, his arms, and his clothes. They tell the police that Warner claims he had a bicycle accident and asks to take a shower. After the shower, Warner takes his bloody clothes and puts them into a plastic bag. He then tells two of the men at the apartment to throw the bag away. The two men do as they are told, and they throw the bag in Lytle Creek, not knowing that Ahmad al-Ezraki's body is nearby. The witnesses also tell the detectives that about a week later, Warner asked the two men to show him where they threw the bag, and Warner tells them he needs help to move a body. Warner has in his possession a tarp, a crowbar, and a gun. The two men do as they are told, but they are unable to find the bag, and they are unable to find the body. Later, the two men tell the police what they know about Ahmad al-Ezraki and Charles Warner. On May the 16th, 2014, Charles Warner is arrested at his dormitory room in Nashville, Tennessee. Murfreesboro detective Doug Arrington charged Warner with the murder of Ahmad al-Ezraki. The case was assigned to the courtroom of Judge David Bragg. The prosecution team consisted of Assistant District Attorneys J. Paul Newman, Matt Westmoreland, and Vanderbilt University legal intern John Elrod. Charles Warner was represented by Nashville attorney Chad Jackson. After months of pretrial proceedings, the case was set for trial. The trial began on February the 8th, 2016. The jury heard over 3 days of evidence. There was testimony from police officers, from medical personnel, from forensic scientists, and from several very important witnesses from the homeless community. On February the 12th, 2016, after several hours of deliberation, the jury returned with their verdict. They found Charles Warner guilty of the murder of Ahmad al-Ezraki. As required by law, Judge Bragg sentenced Charles Lee Warner to serve life in prison. Under the current law, Charles Warner will be 106 years old before he is eligible to meet a parole board. This verdict marked a successful conclusion for the Murfreesboro Police Department, the Rutherford County District Attorney's Office, and especially for the homeless community of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a community that rose from their humble surroundings and stood tall and proud for justice. With us today in the studio is Detective Doug Arrington. Detective Arrington was the lead detective in this investigation and his efforts helped to bring Charles Lee Warner to justice. Detective Arrington, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, J. Paul.
Detective Arrington, we appreciate, of course, you taking the time to be here today. But before we delve into the case itself, I would like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in the Laverne and Smyrna area of Rutherford County, graduating from Smyrna High School in 1983. I served in the U.S. Army Military Police Corps for 5 years and returned home to Tennessee. I graduated from the Tennessee Law Enforcement Training Academy in 1989. I believe if I had to dictate what caused me to become involved in law enforcement as a young man and continuing to this day, I believe it's an interesting and honorable way to make a living. And I still find that true even after 35 years.
Detective Arrington, my summary was brief, and I would like to ask you a series of questions designed to tell us more about the investigation of the murder of Mr. Azraqi and the arrest of Charles Warner. This was really a team effort. Many police officers from the Murfreesboro Police Department put in many hours of work on this case. My first question is, how did the police first get involved in this investigation?
On May 12th of 2014, at about 11:52 a.m., the Murfreesboro Police Department dispatch received a phone call from a man who was a construction worker, actually on the bridge. It's soon to be completed. He was a construction worker doing road construction work in that area. He happened to be on lunch break during this very warm spring day, enjoying the shade of some trees near Lytle Creek. And that part of Lytle Creek that he was at is near West Main Street and the Overall Bridge. While he's enjoying his lunch break on that very warm day, he observed a body in the water of Lytle Creek and called the police. Patrol officers responded to the area, immediately identified that it was a human body in the water. They secured the scene. They talked to several potential witnesses, including Mr. Parsley, who had called us initially, and called for detectives. Myself and many other detectives responded to the scene. Some of the detectives were tasked with the responsibility of looking for, securing, and processing any physical evidence that may be with the unidentified body. Myself and other members, detectives with the violent crime unit, immediately started a death investigation, which ultimately we believed was a homicide.
I want you to take a few moments and tell us what injuries did Mr. Al-Azraqi suffer that caused his death?
The injuries that Mr. Al-Azraqi suffered that was a result of his death was a large laceration that started on his left ear, continued through the front of his throat, and ended behind his right ear. It was a partial decapitation as described in autopsy records.
Could you determine how long or what the estimate was as to how long he had been in the waters of Lytle Creek?
Yes, sir. Based on my observations and observations with scientific examinations later, it appeared he had been there several days. The air temperature and water temperature was very warm at that May 2014, and he had been submerged in the water several days by the time he was discovered.
I understand there was no identification found on the victim's body. Explain the process that you had to go through to identify the body, and who helped in that process?
It was a very challenging way to find a victim. He was totally nude. He was submerged in the water. Tree branches covered the body. The body had been there for several days, we estimate. The air and water temperature was very warm that May, which caused the body to show advanced stages of decay and decomposition. There was no personal items found around the body. It did appear that the person who put the body there attempted to hide the body by covering it with tree branches to keep it submerged. We faced a pretty big task that day. We had a new body, no identification, decomposition, and no readily available way to identify the body.
Can you tell us a little bit about the tattoos that you discovered on the body of the victim and how helpful they were in identifying the body?
I can. One of the ways we started identifying the body was we observed a tattoo on the body, and the tattoo was in Arabic writing. We actually went to a local business member who helped us interpret the Arabic writing, which helped us in the investigation. His name was Ahmad Odeh, and he had owned a restaurant here in Murfreesboro, and that was one of our citizens that helped us in many ways in this investigation. With the interpretation of the tattoo, we also had the body sent for autopsy to the state medical examiner's office. That provided us with more information, including a partial fingerprint that could not be confirmed nor denied for a tentative identification. Based on that, we tentatively identified the victim as Mr. Al-Azraqi. But to positively identify the victim, myself and Detective Sergeant Massey were able to locate an estranged wife and a biological child, Mr. Al-Azraqi. They were located in East Tennessee near Knoxville. We traveled to Knoxville, where we obtained the DNA of Mr. Al-Azraqi's biological son. With that DNA, we were able to positively identify the body we believed to be Mr. Al-Azraqi. We positively identified using his son's DNA.
And I understand also that on the tattoos, he did have a tattoo of a heart that had his wife's name inscribed in that, as well as in Arabic, I believe he had the name of his brother. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. His wife's name was in a heart, her first name, and that helped us substantially. And also, the other tattoo written in Arabic included my brother, Jawid, which was actually his brother's name, and that helped us somewhat, too.
Tell us, how did Charles Warner become a suspect?
Well, we had the body identified within a few days, and we immediately began interviewing people that were associated with or may know the victim. And during those interviews, we were able to identify a suspect. Most of the interviews at this point were citizens of Murfreesboro who happened to be homeless. Some of those citizens include Timothy Ortega, John Candabat, Clifford Brothers, George Lee, and Robert Strange. Based on those interviews, we found that Charles Warner was the last person seen with Ahmad Al-Azraqi. He left an apartment with Al-Azraqi one night and later returned to the apartment alone and covered in blood. Charles Warner obtained assistance in discarding the bloody clothing and throwing it into Lytle Creek, as you described earlier. He also attempted to have people help him move the body of Mr. Al-Azraqi after the murder.
Detective Arrington, what can you tell us about the victim, Mr. Ahmad Al-Azraqi?
Ahmad Al-Azraqi was a Iraqi citizen who became naturalized to the U.S. when he was younger. He had struggled with alcoholism most of his life. He was married at one point and had the biological son. He had lived homeless in the communities of Chattanooga and the Murfreesboro area. And I also found during the investigation that he was associates and friends with Charles Warner, the defendant, and they had actually shared camp together as homeless people here in the Murfreesboro area. And at one point, they even worked together.
Detective Arrington, we want to thank you and the other members of the Murfreesboro Police Department for the excellent work that was performed in bringing Charles Warner to justice. And we also want to thank the homeless community for their participation in helping you solve this case. This is Paul Newman.
I am Charlotte Gardner. I've lived in Adams Place for 3 years. It is the friendliest place you ever could hope to be.
Was the decision to move difficult?
No, it was just a really good change. I never, ever regretted a day of moving here.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
On today's Cold Case Profile, we will highlight the 2015 murder of William Greg Hawkins. And you will hear from the lead investigator, Detective Kyle Norod. You will also hear from Darren Hawkins, the brother of Greg Hawkins. And you will hear from Janet Hawkins, the widow of Greg Hawkins. They join me and former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel and the present District Attorney General Jennings Jones, as we ask once again for your help in solving the murder of William Greg Hawkins. And now, please listen to this very special Cold Case Profile.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
On the morning of October the 16th, 2015, 24-year-old Brandy Hawkins had been fishing with her father. After a few hours, they decide to head back home. Brandy remains in the boat, while her father exits the boat to bring back the boat trailer. Brandy Hawkins loses sight of her father as he walks away and into the parking lot. The time is about 11 a.m. Brandy Hawkins hears what she believes to be gunfire. She walks to the parking lot. There she finds her father, 53-year-old Greg Hawkins. Greg Hawkins has been shot, and it appears his vehicle has been burglarized. Greg Hawkins dies that day, October the 16th, 2015. And on this day, the Hawkins family is here to ask for your help. They want to know why 53-year-old Greg Hawkins was killed, and they want to know who killed him. On this broadcast, we will talk to the lead investigator in this case, Detective Kyle Norod of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, and we will talk to two members of Greg Hawkins' family. The first is Darren Hawkins. Darren Hawkins is the younger brother of Greg Hawkins. The second special guest is Janet Hawkins. Janet Hawkins is Greg Hawkins' widow. She is a person who can not only share with us what she has lost, but also what our community has lost.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jennings Jones, your district attorney. Today, we will be talking about the murder that occurred on the Mona boat ramp. This murder was investigated by Detective Kyle Norod. Detective Norod, can you describe the area where the crime occurred? Specifically, describe where it's located and what type of area it is.
It's known as the Mona boat ramp area. It's a real rural area out in Walter Hill. It's off West Jefferson Pike. As you would imagine, it's a place where people come to fish and put their boats in the water.
As for when this crime occurred, how were you able to establish a time frame?
Well, we got the time frame actually from the victim's daughter, Brandy Hawkins, and the kayaker that was in the area. They heard the shots. We know that it was on October 16th, and we know that the time of the gunshots was around 11 a.m.
The newspaper account relates that Greg Hawkins interrupted a crime in progress. What can you share with us regarding that?
Upon examining the vehicle and the evidence at the crime scene, we could tell that the vehicle had been broken into because there was obvious damage to the vehicle.
The reward on this case now stands at $50,000. If someone has information regarding this case, who should they contact?
They can contact me, Detective Kyle Norod, with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. My number is 615-904-3043. Again, that's 615-904-3043. Or if they want to remain anonymous, they can call Rutherford County Crime Stoppers, and that number is 615-893-7867.
We urge anyone in the public that might have information regarding this act to come forward to the police or to Crime Stoppers. You can do that anonymously with the number we previously listed, and it would be of great service to the community and also to help bring justice in this case.
We want to welcome Darren Hawkins to the studio. And Mr. Hawkins, you're the brother of Greg Hawkins, but tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up and what type of work you do, things like that.
Greg and I grew up in Mount Juliet and in the Mount Juliet Hermitage area. And we both worked at Nissan in Smyrna, Tennessee as engineers.
Okay. And you're his younger brother?
I'm his only brother.
Okay. And what's the age difference between
the
two of you?
11 months difference in our age.
Did you like the outdoors as much as Greg did?
Yeah, we did. We did a lot of things in the outdoors together.
Are your parents still alive? And if so, tell us about them.
Yes, they're both still alive. And my parents are devastated. However, they're both strong. Their heart is broken, you know. October 16th changes our life.
You have been actively involved in keeping up with the case, discussing the case with law enforcement, in particular Detective Norod. There have been a lot of community activities that this case has also generated, and tell us a little bit about that and your involvement in that.
Well, there's a reward now up to $50,000 for information that leads to the arrest and conviction of whoever committed this crime. It's been supported by many people, friends and family, co-workers from the Nissan facility in Smyrna, and also for the Canton, Mississippi plant Yates Services in Smyrna, Tennessee also. There's been a fundraiser activity that was hosted by Murfreesboro Outdoors. The Kayak Anglers for a Cause actually put on the fishing benefit, and Murfreesboro Outdoors hosted the activity. There were several donations from Rick's Barbecue, local businesses throughout Murfreesboro, friends, family, even people that we didn't even know that just heard about the situation. And I'd like to personally thank everyone that contributed or participated in any of this activity.
I know that it'll never replace the loss that you felt, but I know that it's amazing when the community comes together for something like this, and I've been able to keep up with it both on the radio and in the paper. I want to say this to you, tell you that this case will be solved. I believe that it will. Just to hold on and stay in there and trust in Detective Norod and the Sheriff's Department, and I believe that this will come to a successful conclusion.
Well, we've had a lot of support, you know, from everyone, prayers, family, friends, and we've been very fortunate for that.
Well, I want to tell you how much we appreciate you being here, and we hope that this program will generate maybe that one piece of information that's needed to solve this case. So again, keep the faith, and thank you for being here.
Certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
We will continue our discussion of the William Greg Hawkins murder case with Janet Hawkins on this WGNS Cold Case Profile.
I want to welcome Janet Hawkins today to our studio. And Ms. Hawkins, this is the first time you and I have met. I was a prosecutor for a number of years and dealt with a lot of families. But tell us a little bit about you and how you met Greg, how long you've been married, and things like that. How many children you have?
I met Greg in Hermitage Hills. We lived and went to DuPont High School out in Hermitage. Just saw him and his brother riding dirt bikes one day, and I had a dirt bike, and they just looked like the kind of guys that I would like to hang out with, and ended up liking and meeting Greg and liking him, and we were married for 33 years, and he was just a man's man. I knew growing up that I wanted someone like my dad who could do anything, fix anything, and that was Greg. He was just a man's man.
And what year were you and Greg married?
We were married in 1982.
And how many children do you have?
We have two daughters, two great daughters, very strong-willed. My daughters have been my rock.
And I know that in listening to the case, I know that Brandy, I believe that, is that your youngest daughter?
Brandy.
Was fishing with your husband that morning, and tell us how this has affected her.
Brandy is very strong in her faith. Her dad helped me raise just unbelievable girls. She's just like her dad. They both are. They're honest. They're good girls. We've never had any trouble out of them. They're amazing.
You know, as a man, we sometimes look to our son and think, boy, I look forward to going hunting or fishing. But it sounds like that Greg made sure those girls were out there in the outdoors.
The girls had to know what camouflage was. They knew how to, you know, catch fish. They didn't miss out.
And even as they've grown into adults, they still have stayed close and still participate in the outdoor activities.
They do.
Tell us a little more about your husband. We know he worked at Nissan. He was an engineer there. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how long had he worked there?
He'd been there 24 years.
I know that Greg was a man of faith. I recall reading that that you all attended the World Outreach Church. Tell us about his faith.
It was strong. Greg put everything first with the Lord, and thankfully so, because we sat down one night talking about how he was always prepared for everything in life he ever did. If he went to fix something, he researched it. He went in it. He knew what to do. And the girls and I kind of were a little bit angry among ourselves thinking about how Dad wasn't prepared. And one of my daughters spoke up and said, Mom, yes, he was, because he was prepared because he knew the Lord.
I understand he had a quote that he would often recite.
Yes, he did. Billy Graham quote.
And what was that?
That a true servant of God is one that helps another succeed.
He was that type of individual.
Yeah, he loved to teach. Greg loved the truth. I mean, there was no gray area with him. He was either black or white. And he just, you know, this person, whomever they are, given a chance, they would have excelled in whatever, because he would have helped them get there.
If there was one thing that you would like the listening audience to know about Greg or your family, what would it be?
He was a giver. He was not a taker. Greg would give you his time. He would never invade your space. He would have helped them. Greg was my world.
And what's been the most important thing to keep you going in this?
My faith, my church. I tell you, World Outreach, to be such a large church, they have saved my life. Anyone out there, if you need help, find your faith. Find it. Greg would want a message out of this, and it would be, you know, go to the Lord. Don't go out there and do things that are not within the laws. There's help. Please seek help.
In talking with Darren, we mentioned about the various activities that have gone on in the community, and tell us about your involvement in that.
Well, I will tell you that I have met a lot of men that Greg has dealt with in the business world. Just to name a few that have really touched, that has blessed me out of all this, is Randy Boland of Murfreesboro Outdoors and Trent Peterson over at Clark Marine. Greg, he knew how to grab a godly man. And I tell you, that this world needs more of it. And the community has just been, I mean, there's so much love out there.
It's awful that it takes something like this to realize. And I know you've had people come up to you and talk to you about Greg. I know, Darren, you have too, and about the effect that he had on their lives or things that he did for them that you never knew about. Unfortunately, the only opportunity they have is to now try to comfort you.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing. I don't ever want Greg or his story to go away, ever.
And I want to say it's been an honor and a privilege to meet you today.
You as well.
I hope that this will be resolved soon. I believe that there's somebody out there that can help us with this case. A $50,000 reward is a large amount of money. There are people that have stepped up that have made this possible, including the family. I want you to know that we're with you, this community's with you, and good things will happen if everybody will keep praying for a resolution.
Yes. Thank you.
We certainly appreciate everybody's support.
Greg said a prayer every day before he came in the house. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, I get so excited when he'd come home from work and I'd hear him out in the garage. And eventually I realized that I was interrupting prayer every time I'd go out in the garage to see him. So Greg started staying in his truck in the driveway to get where he wanted to be. Then he was all mine.
Well, thank you again for being here, and we'd like to thank Detective Norod from the Sheriff's Department, and we'd like to thank all the people in the Rutherford County community, the community of fishermen and outdoorsmen that have come together to help this family and hopefully bring a successful resolution to this investigation.
Yes, amen.
Our case today lets us all know that none of us can ever be completely certain that we will see tomorrow. We should live each day as if it were our last. We should tell our family every day how much we love them. The Hawkins family gives us all a wonderful example of how to combine love of family and love of God, and how to use those two strengths to overcome the horrible tragedies that occur in our life. But we can be examples too. If you know anything about this crime, please call Detective Kyle Norod or make a confidential call to Crime Stoppers. You be the example of how to be a good citizen, a citizen who cares about this community.
This is Paul Newman. When we return, we will all go inside the courts. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
Get old. Old National Bank, that is. Old National Bank has the experience and service you need to buy a home, make investments, even online and mobile banking. Old National Bank is in the borough on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard, which used to be Mercury Boulevard.
Visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Here's Assistant DA Trevor Lynch.
Good morning, everyone. This is Assistant District Attorney General Trevor Lynch. And today, I will be your tour guide through this episode
of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have not been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On February 15th of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at an apartment complex on Puckett Creek Crossing. Officers discovered the body of Miss Rebecca Stockton on the floor of her apartment. Miss Stockton had been shot multiple times. Detective Julie Cox was assigned as lead investigator. Miss Stockton's live-in boyfriend, Salim Hamilton, was missing. A search for Mr. Hamilton was ordered, and Mr. Hamilton was located in Corbin, Kentucky. Mr. Hamilton was found to be in possession of the rental car of Miss Stockton and a .40 caliber handgun. Miss Stockton was shot and killed by a .40 caliber handgun. Mr. Hamilton was charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon by the Kentucky authorities. Mr. Hamilton has been charged with first-degree murder by the Murfreesboro Police Department and was extradited back to Tennessee from Corbin, Kentucky. A preliminary hearing was held on January 4th of last year, and the General Sessions Court bound the case over for presentment to a Rutherford County grand jury. In May of last year, the defendant was indicted for first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during commission of a felony. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel. On February 13th of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. A witness on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witness's claim that he stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as lead investigator. After the search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st of 2023, a preliminary hearing was held, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In February of last year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Smith for first-degree murder, carrying a weapon with intent. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel Ms. Whitney Rocky, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On May 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at a gas station on Joe B. Jackson in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Officers discovered the body of Mr. Devin Lortz. Mr. Lortz had been shot multiple times in the back and died from his injuries. Officers also located Mr. Eric Mitchell, the brother of Mr. Lortz. Mr. Mitchell had been shot once in the arm and had been beaten across his head, face, and body. Also on scene were Mr. Juan Charco and his brother. The altercation was captured on video surveillance. Detective William Pulis was assigned as lead investigator. Upon conclusion of the investigation, officers discovered that Mr. Charco and his brother were in the process of illegally transporting a vehicle that was owned by Mr. Lovitz from Atlanta, Georgia to Nashville, Tennessee, without Mr. Lovitz's knowledge or consent. Mr. Lovitz and his brother, Mr. Mitchell, confronted Mr. Charco and his brother, and they took the vehicle back at gunpoint. Mr. Lortz and Mr. Mitchell were attempting to drive away in their own vehicles. Mr. Charco retrieved a semi-automatic rifle and shot over 25 times at the two men. Mr. Charco was charged with second-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. This matter has been bound over by agreement. A Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Charco for first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, tampering with evidence, theft of property, reckless endangerment, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by the Office of the District Public Defender, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter is next scheduled to appear before a circuit court on May 14th of this year. On May 31st of 2021, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call regarding a vehicle on fire and reported gunshots. Officers on scene located a burning vehicle with at least one occupant inside. The occupant was later identified as 18-year-old Taya Bryant. Shortly after responding to the call, authorities were notified of two young males that were in the vehicle with Ms. Bryant at the time. Detectives were sent to interview the males. On scene, crime scene technicians located multiple casings from different firearms. The area was canvassed, and officers were able to locate video footage from a resident's home security system. Additional video footage was later discovered at a gas station down the road from the shooting. An autopsy revealed that Ms. Bryant died as a result of a gunshot wound to the head, although her body was extensively burned as a result of the vehicle catching fire. Through interviews of the two males, police learned one of the males had an argument with his girlfriend, Donzelay Hambler,
As a result of the argument, the male took her phone and refused to give it back. Miss Bryant and Miss Hamler were friends at the time, and when Miss Bryant learned of the situation, she was able to contact Miss Hamler in an attempt to return her phone. However, Miss Hamler had gone to her brother, Dontorius Hamler, and told him that her boyfriend stole her phone and assaulted her. Mr. Hamler got at least one or two other unknown males to go with him in Miss Hamler's vehicle to meet the boyfriend, who was with Miss Bryant and the other male. Video footage shows Miss Hamler's car pull into the gas station and park. Then it backs out of the parking spot and leaves the gas station. Miss Hamler's vehicle is then followed by Miss Bryant's vehicle. Shortly thereafter, home security video shows that the two vehicles traveling down Leaf Avenue. Gunshots are heard, and a crime scene reconstruction showed that the lead vehicle, Miss Hamler's car, opened fire on Miss Bryant's vehicle, striking the vehicle multiple times and Miss Bryant once in the head. The video shows the two males from her car running away on foot. Witnesses from earlier in the night placed Miss Hamler and Mr. Hamler inside the vehicle 30 minutes to an hour before the shooting, along with one to two other individuals. Both Mr. and Miss Hamler were charged as juveniles with first-degree murder of Miss Bryant and the attempted first-degree murder of the two males. The state petitioned the juvenile court to transfer both Hamlers to adult court. However, prior to the hearing, both Mr. and Miss Hamler agreed to be transferred to adult court without a hearing. In February of 2023, both Mr. and Miss Hamler were indicted on charges of second-degree murder, two counts of attempted second-degree murder, four counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during an offense, and reckless endangerment. The Hamlers were represented by counselors Mr. Ben Wetzel and Miss Jennifer Fiola. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. After consulting with Miss Bryant's family, an agreement was reached, and on February 20th of 2025, both Hamlers entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to second-degree murder and two counts of attempted second-degree murder. They each received effective sentences of 10 years to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Correction. The investigation continues as to the identity of the remaining assailants. And that concludes our look inside the court.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my co-host, Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.